Brad, when I was in the process of moving house, we were down at one point to, like, both of us had two pairs of socks, one pair of shoe, you're living out of a travel suitcase, and you've got, like, some extra toiletries, you know? Like, you get down to the bare bones.
Oh, yeah.
And in the process of that, I had my art supplies and, like, two basic outfits and food, right? And I was like, this is kind of all I need. This is all I need to live. And it felt like such a revelatory moment of like, oh, I've discovered it. I've discovered the secret of life. That's all you need, Brad, is just a clean pair of socks and a drawing pen, and you're off to the races. That's all I need. I could travel the world and be free. And then I started to unpack my boxes, and here's what happened. I started to go on. Oh, you know what? I actually like having this stuff. Oh, this is handy. Oh, I like having hammers and nails. And oh, I have all these extra clothes that I don't have to wear the same shirt all the time. And I realized that I do like stuff.
I don't need all this stuff. All I need is this paddle game. The ashtray and the paddle game. That's all I need.
And this lampshade. That's
control.
All I need. That's right.
The ashtray, these matches, the remote control, and the paddle ball.
That's right.
And this lamp.
So my Zen Buddhist oneness with the universe, where I was like, all I need is a clean pair of undies and a pen to make art. That's all I need. That lasted about a week and a half. And then I was like, you know what? I like having an Xbox. I want my Xbox back.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly that living out of a suitcase thing gets very old very fast. The creature comforts are worth something.
For a couple days there, I was like, I wanna change my name to Moonflower, and this is all I need to live out of the back of the tent in the backyard. And Moonflower, then my new creation of Moonflower will live a peaceful life, oneness with the universe. And then the next case is, no, you know what? I like having all these old yearbooks. I want those back again.
Well, anyway, that's because you were too cool to be forgotten.
I envy you, for you are a QT, Brad.
You got much. Listen, that's I never got that one. I was glad I got the math one every now and again.
Well, see, I have 11-year-old nieces, Brad, and so you learn yearbook things like I envy you, for you are a QT. All right, anyway, on that note, everybody, hi and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics. I'm Brad Geiger, editor of webcomics.com and cartoonist of Evil Inc.
And I am his very materialistic friend, Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. And Dave, how are those Bonjouros going for you?
I gotta tell you, I'm really enjoying it.
I'm having so much fun doing that, although one of my guesses did come true, and that is I'm sending out Bonjouros for Comic Lab backers and for new people signing up to webcomics.com and for Evil Inc. After Dark. And I have, let me see here, 9 Bonjouros and they're all for After Dark. None of them are opened, which confirms my suspicion that After Dark Patreon backers are really not looking for my face.
That's killing the mood.
Yeah, you look up mood kill in the dictionary, and there I am waving back to you.
Whereas I got to tell you, over on this end, I've got a little photo of Brad Geiger on the nightstand, and it's I intentionally keep it facing out. It's that's what I'm looking for in my.
Funny
in my
thing
life.
Is, so do I, but it's on my side of the bed.
You lean over. Hello, handsome.
Oh, there you are again.
I got to tell you, Bradley, we are chock-a-block full of questions from patrons this week, and I am excited to tackle a bunch of these. Do you mind if I read the first two, because they're both related?
It. Yeah, let's.
Okay, so these are both fun for people our age, who, let's say, not the youngest spring chickens anymore, so it's good that we can answer these. All right, so question number one. What would you recommend for someone who is just starting out cartooning in their 30s, i.e. already married and with kids and a mortgage? All right, so that's question number one, but it's also related to question number two. What is the best advice for an older wannabe comic artist that still does not have a lot of time to put in their career? Assuming I can never really dedicate the time, what is the best way for someone like me to support comic career? Oh, this is a related question they had, sorry.
Yeah.
Assuming I never really can dedicate the time, what is the best way for someone like me to support comic creators, their careers, or their overall industry? So I think in general, the overall big question is, and I would love to tackle this with you, is what is the best way to start when you've already started your life? You're not 19 anymore. You've got bills already in the docket. You've got kids possibly. You've got a career going that you can't necessarily step away from. How do you start a comic career in that scenario? Brad Geiger, go.
My advice for somebody in that situation is exactly the same as my advice for a 20-year-old. And that is to realize that it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I would give you the exact same advice I'd give to a 20-year-old. Do what you can do. Do the best that you can do without trying to crank out a bunch of material that's not as good as it can be. In other words, don't get all wrapped up in, you know, doing a daily update. Find out through trial and error what you can do consistently, and then try to keep that pace and take it easy on yourself if you can't keep that pace. And then just enjoy yourself. Part of the reason that you're doing this, the same exact advice for somebody who's 40 as somebody who's 20, this is more than likely not going to be a sizable source of income yet, and maybe never at all. So if you're not enjoying it, you're really, really beating yourself up and wasting your time. So enjoy doing what you're doing. Do the things that you love, no matter how dumb you think they might be or how unpopular they might be. Find a pace that works for you and try to keep to it. And then post that stuff on as many social media places as you can, making sure that you hit the big three: Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And for starting out, that's it. I would even say having a website should be a goal, because I am a firm believer in a website, but I don't even know that you need that starting out just yet. What do you think, Dave?
Right. Well, okay. So starting backwards from what you just said, I think starting out just on the big three in terms of low-hanging fruit, right? Like you can draw a comic and have it up on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook within 2 hours. But it's going to take you a little bit of time to get that website going. So I will agree with Brad that the website can be put off for a couple of weeks, a couple of months, maybe even half a year. You know, like you don't have to tackle that right away. But the idea of starting the comics as ASAP is a great suggestion on Brad's part. And then I would also jump back a little bit on Brad's suggestion and remind everyone that both Brad and I started our comics careers while holding down a daytime job with a mortgage, married, already starting our life. So we know of what we speak when we say that it is a marathon, not a sprint. It's not going to happen overnight. And it's a long game. You got to think of it like a long game. And so part of it, though, is almost exactly like a diet or working out or getting into shape. You have to change your instant gratification neurons in your brain, because what your neurons in your brain are going to want to do say is, you know what? Oh boy, I'm sure having fun playing game X on Xbox, or boy, I'm sure I'm having fun watching show X on Netflix. This is the best thing I could be doing right now. And the truth is, I know you're tired when you come home from work. I know the kids are in bed and you just want to relax and put your feet up. But this is your time. This is time just for you now. So don't turn to video games. Don't turn off all screens, frankly, and give yourself the gift of cartooning. Because much like eating well or working out, a week from now, you will be so much happier that you made that comic than if you watched another hour of Rick and Morty or played another hour of Halo, you know? So delay that instant gratification and work on the long game of your career. And even if you can only put in an hour a week, 2 hours a week, that's, you know, 52 to 100 hours a year that you're spending on your comics. I guarantee you, you'd much rather have that at the end of the year than 100 hours that you wasted on Xbox. So if you are busy, if you are paying a mortgage, if you're raising kids, if you're married, if you got everything going in your life already, and you feel like, I don't have time for comics, I promise you do. You just have to take away from other aspects of your life.
Right. And by the way, if that is not forthcoming for you, maybe you don't want to do comics as badly as you thought you did. You know what I mean? It's like I want to be an astronaut too, but I don't want to take that kind of time into doing it. Or okay, I'm not going to be insulting here. I'd love to do voiceover. That's a more realistic one. I'd love to do voiceover, right? I've been told all my life, you've got a really distinctive voice. And I'd be like, yeah. In fact, I looked into it one time and I realized this was during a time that the Webcomics Handbook had just come out, and I was still doing comic conventions an awful lot. And people would come up and say, I want to do a comic. I don't have anything yet. How long until I can expect to make a living doing this? And I'd be like, listen, 10, 20 years, this is not an ATM. You don't just post a comic unless you've got lightning in a bottle. You don't just post a comic and start making money. And right. I looked into voiceover and thinking that all I needed was a microphone. And lo and behold, it's a whole a study. It's a whole career. And for me to do voiceover would have taken the exact amount of time that I had put into being a cartoonist. And I realized I just can't do both. Right. And I had to make a decision. And for me, it was a kind of an obvious decision for me to make. It was to do comics. But maybe you need to have your own set of priorities like that, you know?
Yeah, I think you said it best, that if you go to bed at night going, frankly, Xbox was the best thing I could do for myself today. Yeah. And granted, there's going to be days like that, no matter who you are. You're going to need to take time off and give yourself a break. But if for the most part you're like, I went to work today, I played with the kids today, I helped them with their homework, I made dinner for everybody tonight, and then I'm like, for God's sakes, I just want to put my feet up. I get it. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
But if you have a true drive to be a cartoonist, finding the time will come naturally and joy will come from it. So don't fight it if it's not, it's a tricky way to describe this, but even when you're tired, if you still are fired up about doing a comic, then you know that you're onto something.
Yeah. Not only that, but let's take a look at time as a continuum. In other words, let's put you back in that situation where you come home from work and there's all this stuff going on. If you just took out a sketchbook as you're watching Rick and Morty and jotted down ideas as they came to you, or you took out that sketchbook as your kid is napping and you're home with the kids, remember, the big thing that my big complaint about 80% of the webcomics that I'm reading today on the web is that the person's not taking enough time with their writing. They're not writing and rewriting, especially for humor. You're not reading, writing, rewriting, and editing for humor. If you haven't started a comic yet and you're kind of in that gray area between starting and not being a cartoonist, you've got time on your side. So what you can do, even if you're not actively doing a comic right now, is you can start writing down ideas and then going back over those ideas and cultivating them and editing them and rewriting them to the extent that perhaps in a year or 2 years, when you're actually in a different place in your life, your kids are a little bit older, they don't need your attention quite so much, they don't need to be supervised 100% of the time, then you've got an entire treasure trove of writing that you have polished and perfected, and you've got gold just waiting to be spun, right? Now you're in a great position. So I would say take a look at the advantages of what you have as not having started a comic yet, and use time maybe just to write and scribble and doodle and let ideas flow, and let that be the thing that you do for right now.
God, Brad, that is a great point, and I'll tell you why. Yesterday, by hook or by crook, I had 2 hours in my schedule. I was like, all right, I got a cartoon, ready to do it. Let's do this. And normally, I have a bank of ideas ready to go, and I opened up the file with that bank of ideas, and there was nothing. And I went, oh, geez, I got 2 hours. I don't know what to draw. And so I literally sat there with a sketch pad in my hand the whole time going, for 2 hours going, what's an idea? What's an idea? What's an idea?
That's the worst.
So the idea of having a bank of ideas when your kids are young or when work is tough, and then when you do have the time to do it, that's amazing. That's an amazing idea.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what I mean is, and I don't want to sound like haughty or anything, but you do have to remember that time is a continuum, and that you don't have to do it right now. You could plant a seed in that sketchbook that grows 2 years down the road, and you could be preparing to be a cartoonist 5 years down the road by filling a sketchbook and then keeping, you know, obviously keep track of all that stuff, you know, keep it safe so that it doesn't get lost either in a file or in a filing cabinet, something that you can keep track of. But yeah, remember it doesn't have to be, in the moment. You can do some that spans a couple of years in the production, and think of how great that comic is going to be when it does get done. Now you're 5 years or 2 years down the road, you've got way more time to put into it, and you've got this humor that you've crafted and recrafted, and better yet, went back maybe a week, a month later, and looked at it long after the spark of initially having that idea has dimmed. That's when you really judge a punchline. Now you can look at it analytically, objectively, and now you can really improve it. Remember, it's this, you can play the long game with this, you know?
Yeah. And I like that idea though of adopting an attitude of do what you can when you can. And give yourself credit that you're not going to be able to take on the whole world right now. And both of these questioners probably understand that already intuitively. You know, once you've lived a few years in the adult world, you're like, no, all right, I got to pay my mortgage. So that's not out.
Yeah.
So we get that. But nights and weekends are your friend as a cartoonist with a corporate job or a day job. So you'll find that like Brad said, devoting a little bit of time to writing, a little bit of time to sketching, a little bit of time to going out and learning at different events at cartooning or taking on a little bit of Photoshop learning from here or there, it'll all add up. And you'll find, in the same way that someone can go to night school, right, to get a new master's degree or a college degree, and sure, it might take them 8 years to do it, 9 years to do it, but by God, they got a degree at night school over 9 years while doing a day job.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to look at it like that. Like, I'm going to take the next decade of my life. Like, I have to pay for food for my kids. I have to pay for a mortgage. I've got to stay in this marriage. I'm happy with all three, but I want to be a cartoonist too. So like Brad said, look at time as a continuum and say, you know what, 10 years from now, I'm going to be making, I don't know, 50% of my income from my cartooning.
Yeah.
But 10 years, I mean, it's not like it's overnight. So start today, take what time you can, give up. Honest to God, I always say screen time is the best thing to give up because you don't realize how much time you waste on it. Give up screen time and play the long game. And you will find that, for example, I would love to do improv. I would love to play guitar. Those are the two things that I would love to do. If I were to do it, it would take me 10 years of working on it nights and weekends. And it's frankly just speaks to the fact that I haven't had time with young kids to do it. But those are the things that I have the long game to work on. I think Brad's advice is spot on. I think that really you're on the right track. If you have the desire is half of the stuff. That'll fire you through when you're tired and you want to work at night or on the weekends. The next thing is to match that attitude with some aptitude.
Yeah, your big the one thing you don't want to do is to stay motionless. Inertia is the devil in this case. The one thing you don't want to do is nothing.
Right.
But as long as you're moving forward, now inertia is your friend, and you can build off of that. So the question becomes now, Dave, I want to hear your thoughts on this. Let's say that your question now is, what's the best way for someone to support comic creators, their careers, or the overall industry? What's your advice in that regard?
Oh, I have a great answer for this. It's patreon.com/comiclab. That's the short version. No, I'm just kidding. I kid bad. My real answer is patreon.com/drive. That's my real answer. All right. So let me give you my real answer to this, because I've encountered this person a lot. And either by hook or by crook, it was either that life led them down a different path, or that they tried the arts and they found out that it wasn't for them. But yeah. I've had people come up to me physically at comic cons and say, let me just put it to you this way. I'm a very successful lawyer. I do really, really well in law. I always wanted to be a cartoonist. I tried it for a couple of years and found out that I couldn't be a cartoonist, but I still love cartooning. But let me just reiterate, I do very, very well in law.
Yeah.
And so I would like to buy these four Sheldon originals from you. And I go, oh, okay. Yes, that's fine. Sure. And he goes, because you are doing what I wish I could do. And also, I just want to support the arts. I recognize the work behind it. I recognize that it's not the most highest paying gig. And so I want to support. And a version of that attitude sounds like what our questioner is saying here, which is that when you know that you might not be able to do the career that you wanted as a 10-year-old, but you still want to support it, the best way to do it, honest to God, is to find the one or two or three artists that you love and support, and to buy their work and support them.
Yes.
Nice tweets and nice retweets help a lot, but really, and it doesn't have to be a lot, Brad. $5, $10 from a few thousand people can make a year, you know, for an artist.
Oh my gosh.
And so,
yes.
Really, that financial support of buying a book or supporting them on Patreon. And one of the things I think, Brad, why I know I was joking before about Patreon, but one of the reasons why I like it so much is it literally is the substitution of a Snickers bar at a gas station for some people. And but you get a few thousand people doing that, and that becomes a career for that artist. So what are your thoughts, Brad? What is the best way for someone who can't themselves engage in art at the moment to support the arts in comics?
I can't do too much more than to underline what you've said. However, and yes, I am just going to reiterate, a $1 Patreon pledge, in most cases, you're not going to notice that leaving your debit account or your credit card account. You're never going to notice $1 or $2 on a Patreon pledge. But holy cats, do we ever notice it. So never think twice that you're wasting your time with a low-level pledge, because you're not. However, I will say this. Let's say you're not a lawyer. Let's say you're back to that situation where you're a parent and you've got kids and you've got a mortgage and bills to pay and so on and so forth. And a monetary thing just isn't going to happen for you. You'd love to buy original art, but you can't. Here's the deal. You have to realize that we're all working on social media. That's where most of our readers are coming from at this point. So you've got to be part of the engine that makes that happen. And that means that your ability not to necessarily favorite something, but to share something is incredibly powerful. I mean, the least you can do is hit the favorite button. Right. That right. helps spur that algorithm on a little bit. And we're always thankful for that. But if you really want to be a supporter, if you really want to get in there and do something meaningful for an artist that takes no money whatsoever, now you're in the area of sharing that information. In other words, hitting the retweet button, hitting the share button on Facebook, sharing on Instagram. I'm not sure, Dave. This is a good place to expose my own Instagram ignorance. Can you share stuff on Instagram if you like it?
There's like third party or second party apps that sort of help you do it, but no, Instagram is not great at sharing.
Okay, that's what I thought.
The way I would have to do it, I can't share it. So if I don't remember how many I have on Instagram, but I can't share it to my size audience. The only thing I can do is, like, I can tag you in the comments, Brad Geiger, and then Brad Geiger would get a notification saying, Dave wants you to see this comic, kind of a thing.
Yeah, so that's not as useful. But Facebook and Twitter, for sure, when you're on there sharing and passing that stuff along, that's powerful stuff. And every time you do that, trust me, the cartoonist that you did it for knows that you did it, is thankful that you did it, remembers you for doing it. That's good karma. Yeah. Trust me. I keep track of everybody that retweets me, everybody that shares my stuff. I know who they are. I know that they're doing me a good turn. I pay attention to that stuff. So trust me, it is appreciated and valued.
Well, and I'll go one step further. Let's say you and there's a billion of us that can't say this. Let's say you don't have any of the money at the moment for discretionary income to buy books, right? That you'd like to support for Brad. Well, here's what you can do. You can go down to your local library and tell your library to say, hey, here's an independent cartoonist that I think our library district should check out. And patron suggestions are definitely acted upon by library systems. Yeah. And you can say, like, here's a book that you should pick up. And granted, it's not going to be full retail price for Brad. It'll be a library price. But Brad will sell X amount of books into the library systems based on reader recommendations all over the country. And I will sell X amount of books to readers all over the country via their recommendations to libraries. So that helps. A second one I would recommend is if you've got a cartoonist that you love that is an all ages one, suggested for your library bookstore at school. Schools are great for, again, not a huge amount of money, but it also, remember, it's bringing up tomorrow's readers in comics when you get it into libraries and to schools. So that's a big one. And then also, if you are at all a part of an institution or a church or anything like that, that has institutional giving where, like for kids that literacy programs that need books for reading, you can suggest those cartoonists pick up or pick up books from those cartoonists as well. So using your power as one voice among a bigger voice in an institution like a library or a school or a church or a group or a volunteer company, all those things, there are ways to get your favorite cartoonists involved so that they get $1 or $2 from a book sale, but it's also going towards a good cause. So that's another one I can suggest.
Oh, yeah. I listen, not to put too fine a point on it, but don't worry about that, the fact that we're not selling it at full retail price, because all of us are pricing our work at such a point that we are accounting for that 60 or 65% off the cover price when we're setting our retail price. In other words, when I sell a book on Amazon.com, I'm still very happy with the amount of money I'm making. I would obviously rather sell it to you direct, but I've set my price wisely. I've accounted for that 60 to 65% off that I'm going to get through putting out through distribution. I'm still making a profit. Don't let that give you a moment's hesitation.
Brad's over here going, "Don't cry for me, Argentina."
That's just part of it. And I think we've discussed it. We had a Pro Tips episode on it. In the past, that's part of your, as a cartoonist, you setting your price wisely, not based on what DC or Marvel sets their price at a graphic novel, but you using your own costs, your own situation, your own mathematics. And if you and if that cartoonist is doing his or her job, then they're still making plenty of money on that library sale.
Right. And here's here's an immediate way that I can tell you that that it helped me. So I, Brad, forgot to put my Drive hardcover into library book listings, right? Mm. But I have a librarian reader, and I don't know who it is, but I know they're somehow involved with libraries because I had a library middleman, a wholesaler, buy 20 copies of, not 20 copies, what was it? 8 copies of the Drive hardcover, right?
Yeah.
So those retail for $50, but for the wholesaler, I knock 40% off. But what a chunk of change for some librarian basically getting it into their system for those 8 books, you know?
That's the beautiful thing about librarians is that they don't buy one book. They buy books for all their branches. You know, those are going to be multiple book sales.
Right. And so if a librarian gets a suggestion from a reader and they go, "I don't know, I've never heard about this. Let me go on Goodreads or let me go on some librarian forum and check this out." And then there happens to be a nice word said about Evil Inc. or Drive or Sheldon or something. They go, "Yeah, you know what? All right, I'll get." They have a budget, like their tax base. They have a budget to work with. Granted, it's not as what they should be, but they have X amount of dollars they need to spend on new books every year. Mm-hmm. And they've been to the ALA conferences. They've seen everything Scholastic has, but they're like, "You know what? I will pick up 5 copies of this Drive book. Why not?"
Absolutely.
And it makes a difference. You get a couple library systems in the U.S. buying Drive hardcovers, and suddenly it's like, "All right, well, that helped with the mortgage this month." You know, so there are ways, even in a cashless transaction for the artist, that you as a reader can help out their career. And the big one is going to get them into your local library.
Absolutely. So listen, Dave, since we're already kind of talking a little bit about social media, this leads seamlessly into another question that I wanted to get to at some point in this show.
All right, let's do it.
And that's this. It says, when I came up in social media and comics, communities were built in forums and comment sections. But the way we consume content, socialize, and the social media available to us has changed dramatically post-Web 2.0. Can you offer advice on community building in this new landscape?
Wow. All right. This is a great question because absolutely things have changed. I know Brad, for example, does not have a comment section on his site anymore, and he can talk about that in a minute. I still offer a comment section on my site. But I will be honest in that I don't chime in on it as much as I used to. So a lot of it is fan-driven, whereas on my Patreon comment sites for Sheldon and Drive, I comment a lot more. Mm-hmm. And on Discord servers and the like. But How do you build a community? I mean, the most important thing to start from is that a community is built mainly around your voice. So if you are, and I've said this before, if you are kind, if you are funny, if you are welcoming, you tend to attract an audience that is kind, welcoming, and friendly. If you are a jerk and sarcastic and point out shortcomings and pick on the weak and the like, you will tend to get an audience that's a jerk. And we can all immediately think of a cartoonist or a forum online or an artist or an author, cough, 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 Dilbert, that might attract that sort of a jerky mentality. I slipped that in. Where, you know, kindness begets kindness and being an asshole begets being getting assholes, frankly. So, So first and foremost, I want to start from that the voice you put out into the world, it largely dictates who you will attract back to yourself as readers, as fans, as your community. Now, as far as building a community, I still am a proponent of having comments, but I am much more willing to just delete wholesale anyone even slightly being a jerk. And as I've said in the past, if anyone even comes to me and goes, "Hey, why was that deleted?" I go, "Oh, well, we're not allowed to be jerks on this forum." And that's, you were being a jerk. Like, I'll just say it to him now. Like, in my 20s, I would have been like, "Oh, well, that's because I'm sorry I have deleted your comment, but it's just, I really want to maintain a nice attitude." And now I'd be like, "No, you're being a jerk. I don't know what kind of bad day you were having, but no, we're not going to tolerate that kind of talk."
Exactly.
So that's one thing. So for people that maintain a comment section like myself, I would advocate deleting prodigiously, depending on if someone's being a jerk. And then around it, I think you can still build a community on something like Twitter, on Facebook, by responding. And again, respond to positivity. Don't respond to negativity. Don't feed a troll, basically. So if someone's tweeting at you and being a jerk, just let it. I mean, it's going to stick in your craw for a couple hours because I'm a human. It does it to me. But don't respond to them. Don't feed the fire. If someone says, here's a sample. If Brad gets two tweets, "Brad, I love today's comic. Oh my God, the line work was amazing. And the punchline nailed it. Thanks so much for everything you do and have a great day." Brad's going to respond to that one. If Brad gets this tweet being like, "I saw that joke in 1978 in an Australian TV show. Good job, Brad. Way to copy that Australian TV show." Guess which one Brad shouldn't respond to? Brad should not respond to that second one.
Absolutely not.
And so even that builds a community. And I'll tell you why. People on Twitter, people on Facebook, people, they see what your responses are. If they're a true fan, they go back through your responses on other people. And they're like, "Oh, I wonder what Brad was responding to. Oh, look at this. Oh, that's nice that he said that to a fan. That gives me a warm feeling for Brad," you know?
Yeah.
So even on Twitter, your single person responses are public and they are read by thousands. So keep that in mind. And then I've talked too long. So, Brad, you go now. How do you build a community in a post 2.0 world?
Well, here's the deal. Here's a couple of thoughts for you. Number one, I come in on the opposite side of the spectrum when it comes to site comments. I close down my comments on my site because for me, there was only one reason to have them, and that was to drive page views, and that was to drive ad revenue. And community building was important too, but the community that formed around Evil Inc. was never, especially in the comments section, was never as strong as it was in other places such as Twitter and Facebook. So for me, it was very easy to shut that down. Also, because again, I talked about this a while back on the "I don't get it" thing. You know, when you every day there's somebody that doesn't get any joke that you've written, no matter how great you wrote that joke. There's a certain percent of people that didn't get that joke, and they will be the first people every time to hit your comment section, no matter who they are, and that can get you down, and that can cause you to mentally write safer and safer jokes, which happen to be not as funny as jokes where you might take a little bit of a risk. So I got rid of comments, and I've been happy as a clam ever since. And the answer to the question that we were originally asked, how do you build community? That happens on social media. That's, by the way, what social media is all about, is building community. That's what social media is for. And in fact, once I shut down my comments on my site, I started to realize it was much more valuable to do my community building on social media, because then those interactions always have a knock-on effect where somebody else is going to see that and maybe retweet it or follow the person that you're talking to, and they might end up seeing your interaction through that. In other words, there's a lot more viral capabilities to doing community building on a social media network than there ever was on your website. That's exactly what social media was built for. So that's where you should be doing your community building, out there on social media, where you have an effect to not only talk to that one reader who's engaged, but to talk to a thousand other readers who are semi-engaged and get them engaged.
Well, let me ask you a question on building on your thing. So yeah. one thing that comments did that I social media, aside from maybe Facebook, doesn't allow for is a comments section on a site allows for readers to talk to readers independent of the artist, like springboarding off the artist, but independent of them. But I know Facebook allows for that. But how, like the question behind the question of what this questioner is asking, well, that was a lot of the words question there. the question behind the question is, how do you get to like a true sense of community springboards off the artist, but it's also independent of the artist? So how do you create that where they are talking to each other independent of you having to do anything, where they're being kind to each other and making each other laugh and sharing memes or jokes based on your comics or whatever it is? How do you get to that, Brad?
The only social media that really fails, and it's not it you can do it on Twitter, but you're right. It's in other words, how many times have you started a conversation on Twitter? A third party comes in, before you know it, the conversation jumps away from you. You're not talking anymore, but the other two people are, right?
Right.
So it's not impossible for that to happen on Twitter, but you're absolutely right. On Facebook, it's much more common for those people to talk back and forth and for the conversation to grow organically from there. But you're right. You're right. That's one advantage that keeping the comments on your site does have. I don't know that it ever happened on my site to a degree that I considered significant. For me, it was so easy for me to get rid of it because that didn't happen as much. Right. But I'll tell you where it does happen now. It happens on Patreon all the time. That's where I do see my backers making a comment and then talking to each other and sharing thoughts and stuff like that. Patreon has replaced that an awful lot.
Yeah. So I have two thoughts on that. Patreon, absolutely, especially with Drive, because I bury Easter eggs in that story and there's callbacks that go back 150, 200 pages. Mm-hmm. So it's great for readers to, there's a sense of excitement about who is the first one that can sort of crack the egg, you know what I mean, in terms of figuring out some storyline thing that I've buried in there. And so there's a lot of crosstalk on Patreon, on Drive for, oh my God, look at how I see what he's doing here, or I don't see what he's doing here, like fan theory sharing, basically, right?
Yeah.
And that's perfect for a sci-fi strip because, man, nerds like myself, we love to do our fan theories about what's going to happen. So Patreon is great for that because it's the true fans of the fans, right?
Mm-hmm.
But my second thought is, and I want to admit to this, again, this is a good question to admit to this failing, is that I don't know if it's a question of getting older or I don't know if it's a question of getting a bigger fan base, but I find that I am attracted to social media platforms that allow for one-way communication.
Yeah.
I don't have the wherewithal to engage with tens of thousands of people, but I still want to get what I have to say out there. And I don't want to say that it's egotistical on my part, but maybe it is. Maybe it's just like, I just want the world to hear what I have to say, but I don't really want to engage. So in that sense, maybe it is a failing on my part as a person. I like Twitter and I like Instagram because it's very one way for the most part.
I don't think that's a failing at all. In fact, at the same time I was shutting down comments, my blogging on my site increased because all of a sudden I wasn't writing something on the blog. And then you got that voice in your head saying, well, somebody's going to say this, so I've got to account for that. And somebody's going to say this, so I got to write it that way. All of a sudden, I was much more free in the blogging I was doing. And I still think doing a blog under your comic is super helpful for engagement. It's great for getting different messages out. In fact, I'm often surprised at how much of that stuff my readers are reading. But I don't give a second thought to that being a one-way conversation. I love the fact that it's a one-way conversation. And then if somebody wants to talk about something like that, again, I direct all that stuff to social media where at least I'm getting a little advantage out of it in getting a little, you know, followers and stuff like that. I'm getting some positive points out of it, and I can control it a lot more. Because remember, on social media, things shift so quickly that if it does turn negative, Facebook, you've got all kinds of ways to delete that. And if it gets way out of hand, you can just shut it down. And Twitter, things shift so quickly. If you just withdraw, 9 chances out of 10, that's going to settle to the bottom of the tank. So yeah. I would just as soon have those conversations happen on social media. And I don't feel a bit of problems having one-way conversations, especially on my site, because that's nothing but good.
Well, and so one last thought about building a community around social media is that I know you and I disagreed with it when I effectively shut down my Facebook presence on a personal level. Like, I still keep it one for Sheldon. But I got to tell you, I've had no hit to my business by not engaging in Facebook anymore.
Wow.
So I want to tell you that me putting my emphasis on Patreon, where I'm actively engaged and laughing and joking around with readers in the comments on Patreon, nothing about that seems like anything but a win to me, in the sense that these are people that are actively supporting the strip. So of course I want to engage with them first. Like, Facebook should be the ninth thing that I'm engaging with. Those are the people that are just going to be negative anyway, for the most part. And I hate the platform now for their past business practices of sharing data. So I have found no hiccups in leaving Facebook, for what that's worth. Now, granted, might there be some growth that I'm missing and I just don't notice it because it doesn't materialize? Yes, that's possible. But I guess what I'm trying to say is you can still build a robust business even if you leave out one or two social media platforms that you don't like, i.e. Facebook, for me.
Absolutely.
So anyway, that is what it is. But I think we've tackled that question, young Bradley. Shall we move on to the next one that I can read off here?
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
So Bradley J. Geiger of Philadelphia, PA, let's get your questions on. Let's get your thoughts on this. What are your thoughts on staying focused in a particular genre? When I've researched self-publishing prose fiction, the prevailing advice is to find your niche and stay there so readers know what to expect from you, but more importantly, so Amazon's algorithms understand who to recommend your things to. How do you think this translates to comics? Bradley J. Geiger, the leading advice voice on Amazon's algorithms, go. How do you...
I think that's the dumbest advice I've ever heard. I think it's beyond dumb. In fact, I would think it's so bad that it would be detrimental to your career if you listen to that kind of advice. Number one, it is absolutely moronic to think that Amazon's algorithm, Amazon of all people, that Amazon's algorithm is so weak that it can't swing with Brad Geiger does one book on vampires and another book on, you know, historical romance. All right. Its algorithm is going to take care of that just fine. The fact that you wrote both of those books is not going to hurt them in the slightest. Okay. Now, is there an advantage of becoming known for a particular niche? Not niche, but niche. Is there a way? Is there an advantage to becoming known for doing a certain type of thing? Absolutely. But should you let that guide your creativity? Absolutely not. If you want to write vampires this month, you write vampires. And by the way, this goes back to what we've been saying about branding the product and not the artist. I'm sorry, just the opposite of that. Branding the artist and not the product. You should have the freedom to say, okay, I've done a vampire comic for 3 years and I'm kind of over it. I'm bringing it to a close, and starting Tuesday, I'm going to write a space opera. And if that's where your creativity leads you, that is absolutely where you should go. And you should not worry about whether you fit this niche or not. If that's where your brain is taking you, you follow your brain. I think it's horrible advice. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I'm gonna use a historical precedent here, and I think there was a playwright that once wrote a play called Love's Labor's Lost, and did good, did solid. But then, you know, he really went against the success of that comedy, and wrote a little play called Othello. It was a tragedy. And this playwright paid a big price because the algorithms in the theater world. I almost forgot his name. I had to look it up. It was William Shakespeare is his name. He did not stick to his lane. He didn't stick to his genre.
Yeah.
And he paid a big price for it, frankly. I mean, I know some people call him the greatest playwright in the English language, possibly the greatest playwright in the world. But he didn't stick to his lane. And I think he paid a big price for it career-wise. He never took a play to France in his lifetime. So that right there tells you all you need to know.
There was a guy severely mishandled by the algorithms. In fact, I think that was on his deathbed. I think he said, yay, though my life has been verily, those algorithms suck.
That was really the best verse you could have done there, Brad. That was great. We all applaud that. No, but my point is this, though, is that, first of all, art has to come from the heart, from the inspiration, from the core of who you are and what you want to tell in the world. And is that sometimes a silly fart joke? Yes, absolutely. Is that sometimes about the tragedy that it is to be alive and to have your loved ones die? Absolutely. That's also part of being, the human experience in art. So your art is going to find inspiration where it's going to find inspiration, and true art can spring in all genres and frankly, some of the most amazing art bends and melds genres. There is nothing like crying through tears, as we talked to Gloria last week, and there is nothing like crying after a good laugh. So,
I'll just go back and laughing through tears. Crying through tears is a very, very specific endeavor. But what we talked about last week was laughing through tears.
Yes. Oh, that's me when the bills come every month, Brad. That's a different.
I'm glad to know I'm not alone.
No, but you know what I'm getting at though is that. If you truly want to create something that's unique to you, then you have to speak from your voice and not from a mathematical model of what might work and this or that. So I find that the most enjoyable bits of fiction that I enjoy are genre melding and genre mixing. And if making a living from your art is part of your goal, which it sounds like it is, then yes, absolutely take business considerations into your art making. But the art making has to come first, I would think, Brad. Don't you think? The inspiration always has to be there. The joy of it has to be there. The desire to mix and match your experiences in your life with different genres that exist in the world. And so I wouldn't play too heavily into the anxiety game, because that's what you're playing. You're making a fear-based decision of, oh no, if I tell a Western that has robots in it, then the algorithms aren't going to know what to do with that. Well, to hell with the algorithms. Create the story you want to create. And if it's a Western that has robots in it, create a Western that has robots in it.
Oh, and by the way, if you do a good comic, if you do the comic that's in your heart, that has your passion, that you pour all of your creative energy into and make it, and by the way, that's how you make a good comic. We'll talk about in a second how you make a crappy comic, but doing a good comic starts with your passion. If you do a good comic, there ain't an algorithm in the world that can stop you.
Yeah.
Right? If you do a good comic, those algorithms are going to be on your side one way or the other. They'll write an algorithm for you. You'll create a new algorithm if you do a good comic. You don't have to worry about algorithms if you're doing good work.
Right. And keep in mind that J.K. Rowling, who's now the, or as Brad likes to call it, what was the name you said? J.K.
Rowling's.
Rowling's. Now the richest woman in the UK, but how many rejections did she get for a genre that for the most part didn't exist in terms of magical kids doing a magical adventure and real world stakes in terms of friends dying? I mean, there were versions of kid stories that had magic in it, but She basically created her own genre there, and paid the price, which was to become the richest woman in the UK. So what's Brad saying is the joy that you find in your own art 100% translates into the story itself, and that joy gets picked up by readers, and the joy is what comes through, not the genre conforming aspects of the story. That's right. Another way of saying it. No one's going to give you extra points if you hit all the story points of a traditional hero's quest. What they will give you points for was, did they enjoy reading it? Did it change their life? Did it give them new things to think about? That's what you'll get points for.
How many times have we seen crappy comics, Dave? How many times have we seen a comic that you could tell was made just because somebody said, here's a demographic? You know, and they build that comic not based on where their passion is, but because they saw a demographic that they felt needed to be exploited.
Can I be a jerk for a second?
Go ahead.
I think that's 80% of what Marvel and DC publish right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Here's a demographic. And what I want to see is, where's the passion? You know, where's here's a fantastic example, because we've talked about this a number of times on different podcasts. When Scott Kurtz was still doing just PvP, they took a look and said, you know what, this is the perfect time to do a D&D comic. And that was a conversation they had. But if Scott didn't have the passion for D&D that he had, then Table Titans would have been a crummy comic.
Right.
I guess what I'm trying to say is, taking a look at a demographic is fine, but if that's where the conversation starts and stops, you're dead.
Right.
You've got to have that passion that says, here's a story that I'm dying to tell you. And then you're going to make it happen. But how many times do we see instead somebody who just starts and stops the conversation at, these things are really popular right now. These fidget spinners are really popular. I'm going to do a fidget spinner comic. Well, you know, that's going to be great for a one shot. But if you're building that fidget spinner comic character out over the long run, it's not going to have legs, and you're going to be onto something else in a mere matter of weeks.
Right.
So go with where your passion is and let all that other stuff fall into place. If you do a comic that you're passionate about, not an algorithm in the world can hurt you.
And another way to look at this is, a part of you, because you're coming at this from a fear-based question, and I get it. I have those fear-based questions all the time. But a part of you, the question behind your question is, what if I do what I'm really passionate about and it fails? Wouldn't you say, Brad, that's the fear?
Yeah.
That's the fear, and we all have that fear. But here's the thing, though. It's the answer is, better to be damned for who you really are than to be damned for some fake version that you made for an algorithm, you know?
Right, right.
So better to have failed by putting your heart on the line at the end of your days. You're dying and you're like, well, I made the comics I wanted to make. Did they do well? I don't know. But I did what I wanted to do, than to say, I never made the comic that I wanted to make and I failed anyway.
That's the more tragic of the two.
Right. And the truth is, you know, every once in a while we'll stumble upon some Russian composer from the 18th century that failed in his own lifetime, and then someone else will take it up and record a new version of his compositions, and he'll suddenly blow up, you know? And so the idea is that if there's true passion, if there's true individuality in your art, maybe it's not dead even when you're dead. You never know. You never know what second life that art can find because that kernel of passion is in there. You know what I'm saying, Brad?
No, that's kind of a neat thought.
Even in death, it's not truly the end of your art. And so for God's sakes, put your heart on the page, because you only get this one life, and make it the way you want to make it.
I couldn't say that any better. So listen, Dave, we've got one more topic, and I think we got time to slide it in, because it's one of our $5 Patreon backers, and I'd love to get it in. You think we got time,
Brad? For you, I take time to make time, and I make time to take time.
Well, here it is. I think I'm undervaluing my Patreon pledges, and here's what he says. I think I'm undervaluing my art. Currently, I have Patreon subscription tiers at $1, $3, and $5. I want to eliminate the least popular tier, $3, and raise the minimum tier from $1 to $2. How can I do this respectfully without upsetting my current $1 patrons? I know I need to make this change, but I'm afraid of screwing it up. And that's out of all that, that's the most important sentence, I think. Dave, what advice do you have for this person?
Well, first of all, this is a great question.
Yes.
Because if in your heart of hearts you are asking yourself, hey, I think I'm undervaluing my Patreon pledge levels, the answer is yes. The answer is always yes.
Yes.
Because as artists, we are always so often willing to undershoot us that in those rare occasions in your career where you go, you know what, maybe I should charge a little bit more, listen to that voice, because that is an
yes.
honest voice. So I will also say this before we get into the brass tacks of this person's question. If you have not started a Patreon page, or for that matter, a Kickstarter page, I would take a hard look at what your ultimate minimum is. Keeping in mind that both Kickstarter and Patreon allow someone to pledge the minimum of a dollar, even if you don't set a dollar, mm-hmm. make your minimum $2 on Patreon, or make your minimum on Patreon $5. Because if someone is enjoying your comics and are willing to crack their wallet, the extra dollar is not going to stop them. And if it does stop a percentage of people, the advantage to having the overall majority of people at $2 versus one is mathematically still worth it to you.
Oh, yeah.
So set your minimum at two. That's my advice for anyone who has not started a Patreon yet. Let two be the new one, as I like to say it. So start your minimum at two. And then, frankly, questioner is asking, I would not have a tier between $2 and $5. Let $5 be your next tier. And mm-hmm. then I would say from that, jump up to 10. And after that, maybe some other ones. And granted, Brad might disagree with the details on that. But I think we will both agree that if someone is willing to pledge at 3, they're probably willing to pledge at 5. And if they're willing to pledge at 8, they're probably willing to pledge at 10. You know, so granted, you'll have to have Patreon pledge rewards that are equivalent to those. But I think starting at two is the base way to start. All right. Now to this person's specific question. Brad, do you want to tackle this one first, or do you want me to tackle this one first?
Yeah, I'll jump in here and say there's a right way and a wrong way to do that. And the right way is you give your patrons a heads up with plenty of time for them to change or cancel their pledges.
Right.
Knowing full well that that's a possibility, and that, again, you're playing the long game. So if you are making good decisions here, it's going to end up so that you're further ahead by the time the month shakes out. And if, by the way, just a little caveat there, if it doesn't, you can always change it back. There's no rules to the number of times you can change this thing. Okay. But you give your patrons lots of time to adapt. You tell them why you're doing it, and then you pull that trigger. And then you don't panic, because a bunch of people, readers always hate change. So of course you're going to lose a certain number of pledges. That's fine. If you've thought this thing through, then you're going to end up with a higher number of pledgers than you did the month before. At some point, like if not at the end of this month, then at the end of next month. Okay. And number two, you're making a very common mistake here in your subscription tiers. If you've got tiers at $1, $3, and $5, those are all too close together. Like Dave says, if somebody's willing to go one, they're willing to go three. If they're willing to go three, they're willing to go five. And meanwhile, take a look at what you're doing. You're diluting all that. You've only got a certain amount of time to do content, right? You're diluting your comic content among three different levels, and they're all in the same darn area, $1 to $5. Let's face it, the $1 to $5, that's practically, I would even make the argument that if someone's willing to go $1, they're willing to go $5, okay? So you've got, you're splitting all your content in these three narrow little categories, which happens an awful lot with people's first-time Patreon campaigns, and meanwhile, you could be building it out. So what you should be doing is aiming for fewer pledge levels that are robust with content. That's what's going to get the people on the boat, is content, okay? So I would be bumping those all up, I would be, and by the way, I wouldn't be doing pledge levels that only have $2 difference. I'd start at maybe $2 and then jump to $5. And then I wouldn't go anything less than $5 and $10 increments after that. $10 is next, $20, $50, I think, is the next pledge level up on Comic Lab. We don't deal with really small increments. Instead, what we do is we have a few narrowly defined pledge levels, and then we focus all of our time and attention into putting as much content as we can into those levels. Do you agree?
I do. And so I specifically talked to Patreon about this very question when I made the switch from Drive being a per comic to a per month update, Brad. So I want to chime in with a couple of things that they said that I will pass along as well. So Brad's advice of giving a long heads up is great. 30 days tends to be the best way to do it. You don't want to go over 30 days because A, people forget, and then B, people forget. That's the one thing. You want the window. There's a reason why Kickstarter keeps it at 30 days, and that is because there's an average window of action for humans, and it's roughly about 30 days, you know, to take a low impact action. So 30 days is good, and it's also fair. You can point to it and say, oh, I'm so sorry, I had given you 30 days notice. No one's going to be like, that's not enough time, you know?
Right.
So there's no vacation that goes more than 30 days. Everyone will be back in the office or back at school or back at their house within 30 days. So that's good. The other thing I would say is I believe, and I should have checked on this before I read this question, but I believe that there is a way to hide Patreon levels. And what I mean by that is if you are truly nervous about losing or somehow messing up these $1 pledges, and if you by bumping them to two or asking them to bump to two, what you can do is you could grandfather them in at the $1 level that is now hidden, I believe.
Ooh.
And then from there on, everybody that's new goes to the $2 level. So that's one option. And I apologize that I'm not 100% sure that that's possible, but I'm pretty sure that's possible. So that's one option. But then the third option that I would super recommend is, like Brad said, like a version of what Brad said, make this changeover an event. Talk about it for 30 days about why you're doing it, why Patreon has become important to you, and why you would like to go to the $2 level. And give everyone enough of an option and say, here is what you'll be getting at the $2 level. And use this as an opportunity to revamp how you're approaching Patreon, perhaps. You can either say, like, I'm going to be blogging more, or I'm going to be in the comments more, or I want to be able to devote more time just to you as patrons. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be more content. You can just reframe the way that you're talking about Patreon and make it so that to the average human being, they'll go like, I see what they're doing. They're still trying to charge me more, but all right, yeah, I'll go with $2. You know, you just got to make it so that the yes is not impossible. You know what I mean, Brad? You gotta make it so that they go, all right, that's fine. $2 is fine.
Yeah. Well, you've got to make it attractive and make sure that they're getting lots of good content at each one of those reward levels. That's
right.
For me, I think that's the key. If they're getting lots of stuff there, they're going to be just fine. And if they're not, let's face it, you weren't going to hold on to that person for very long anyway.
Exactly. And then the last thing, and I just want to echo Brad's excellent point because it is 100% going to happen. You are going to experience flux. There will be a drop, there will be a rise, there will be people coming in, there will be people dropping. Oh, by the way, you also want to use this as an opportunity to super advertise Patreon to the outside world again. You know, make this a push to everybody. Anyway, just be prepared that there is going to be flux, and flux is unnerving, especially if Patreon has become a big chunk of your income. But know that you are making a change, again, for the long game. And it's funny how often that's come up today. This is a change for the long game that's going to make it better for your new patrons that are going to discover and join you in 2 months, 6 months, 12 months from now. You want them coming in at that $2, $5, $10 level, then $1, $3, $5 level. So you're helping future you out by taking the lumps today.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, just to tie a nice little bow onto this one, is that again, time is on your side. So every time you're posting exclusives, particularly to Patreon, and the more you spend time of building up that Patreon archive, that just makes those levels more and more enticing to a new backer. So in other words, when I say that on one of my reward tiers, I've got nearly 600 pieces that of comics and illustrations that you get the moment that you sign up. That's a really powerful message, all right? When I say I've got 1,200 exclusives already, total, that's powerful. And saying you get that the moment you sign up, that is good. So you've got time on your side. So if you do have a little bit of flux here, if you do have a little churn, that's okay. You're going to get through this too. And in a couple months, everything's going to be okay. Listen, you made it through last December when Patreon had that whole thing with their payment plan and all that. And we all thought, some of us thought, the sky was falling and the world was coming to an end. You made it through that, right? You're going to make it through this too. So take it easy. Kick back. If you got to treat yourself to a tasty adult beverage, do it responsibly. But remember, this too is going to pass and you're going to be better for it.
Yeah. I think that's a great note, Brad. And I, in fact, the fact that the music is chiming in, Brad, lets me know that that was a great point. Thank you, music. That's very helpful of you.
That's how you can tell I made a good point. You hear the music, and oddly enough, it only happens once a show. Well, in that case, you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your hosts have been the music-generating Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com. And the cartoonist of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And the lovable, huggable Dave Kellett, co-director of Stripped and cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and Drive at drivecomic.com.
And the Comic Lab theme song is used with permission. Come on, David. Too excited to get through that sentence. That's what I was. Used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net.
Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab. So we'll go ahead and say that twice. patreon.com/comiclab.